Post-COVID-19, How to Build Better. That's why 80 architects across the country with the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, have been meeting intently during this health crisis. They are looking to problem solve as communities try to build in physical distancing in this health crisis. Honolulu architect Dean Sakamoto is part of that national committee. He also sits on the AIA State Council and serves as the Disaster Risk and Resiliency Coordinator. Sakamoto completed an office project for the Elemental Accelerator just as everyone began working remotely. The open floor plan offers built-in flexibility as office workers begin to return to the workplace.
In order to solve problems, we first need the right information to base our design solutions on. So in regard to COVID-19, we're still in the information gathering process, and we're trying to filter that, especially through this AIA National Committee, where we have 80 other architects and some experts in public health who are contributing to this information gathering, also filtering that information in regard to what is relevant to the design of cities and buildings. And then all of that is, once that information is analyzed and processed, you know, we can make recommendations, but there's a whole process of legal constraints, such as building codes and zoning rules that are the result of the science that, you know, the information is based on. So science is number one, as we've been hearing on TV as well, right? Listen to Dr. Fauci first, and then filter it to the respective areas of expertise, like in this case, design of cities and buildings. And then also best practices, which inform our design work, emerges for wider application to specific situations and problems that we are assigned to solve.
Right. So we're talking about, you know, maybe changing the paradigm when it comes to office space or school space as we start opening up classrooms.
Schools are of particular concern to me morally and socially because, you know, it's the next generation we have to prepare, right, to take over. And I think they're getting the short end of the stick in that regard. You know, there are all kinds of things that can be recommended, but as I said earlier, you know, the government needs to establish what is going to be legal based on science, and then we follow suit. Science informs government to establish laws. Planners and designers, like architects and engineers and urban planners, address these legal constraints through the design problem-solving process, right, which we do on an everyday basis at all kinds of levels. But we also, what's I think special about what architects bring to the table and planners as well and our engineering colleagues is the factoring for the social and cultural considerations, right, and the specific economic constraints for each project or problem. We are change makers at the end of the day, and we proactively think ahead and think everything through. We do our best to draw plans that reflect the forethought, and then we rely on the construction industry, right? Our partners in realizing the forethought, planning, and design. So I think a lot has to be done in preparation for making these changes, and you know, from the national to local, and then to the project-based levels. And there's a tradition for that. I mean, I just came across a post on a site called City Lab, and you know, which cited the fact that pandemics in the past have really shaped cities. And that's you know, going back to, you know, my architectural and urban history courses, you know, major changes, catastrophic changes, and in fact, revitalization and improvements of cities over the centuries have been really made because of the issue of disease, right, to create a more sanitary and, you know, a better environment. And so you can look at the situation we're in as an opportunity to reset also and to improve what we currently have. As we say in the disaster field, you know, let's build back better, right, rather than just replace what's there before. The Paris, France that we know today with the broad boulevards, the, you know, beautifully designed streets and avenues, you know, were the result of Napoleon's mandate to his chief planner, Baron Haussmann, to redesign the city, to straighten out the crooked medieval streets, to make them broader and wider to reduce the transmission of disease. But Napoleon also had a social political motive, too, behind that. He was also looking at to control the riots that were prevalent in the medieval quarter. Fast forward to our Chinatown here in Honolulu, there were two significant fires, one at the end of the 19th century and then the fire in 1900, which was supposed to be a controlled burn to mitigate the rat infestation that was causing the plague. And as the story goes, the fire department's controlled burn leveled most of Chinatown, most of the 19th century, 18th, 19th century urban fabric. interesting story in relation to one of our projects that my office is working on, the Wolf Fat restaurant, which is a landmark Chinese restaurant, which is, until it closed in the early 2000s, it was the longest running Chinese restaurant in Honolulu, and it survived. It actually burned down through both fires, but the business survived, and by 1934, the Wolf Fat that we see today, that's now vacant but soon to be renovated into a restaurant and a micro hotel, was built out of concrete. So the architect, Y.T. Char, had the sense to recommend to his clients, say, hey, if you don't want to build Wolf Fat again for the third time, why don't we just build it on concrete? And that he did, which helps us today because we have a robust concrete frame building to renovate and restore.
So you've got kind of the long-term planning, problem-solving, and then you have, you know, maybe some short-term problem-solving that needs to be done as, you know, we move out of isolation but still have to do the physical distancing part.
You know, moving forward, and I think this is happening very quickly as we speak, because the government is starting to, on many levels, right, and from the national to the state to local level, is starting to open up facilities. So there are, I think, low-hanging fruit retrofits that we can do, and we really should do, in both our urban spaces, parks, streets. We can do a, what I call a phase mitigation through retrofitting, and then also for our facilities like schools, workplaces, grocery stores, churches, and other places where people will soon gather again. Some of the examples can include like pop-up sanitation stations. You know, these are not new, but also include a personal protection equipment vending, so you can have, people can have their things ready at, you know, gloves and hand sanitizer got ready, both at entries and exits and, you know, strategic locations in the streets. But I think what's really important, and what how architects, you know, really can help and should help, I think, is to come up with revised space planning layouts and standards, especially for our public schools, so they can get back to work and you know, it comes back to classroom size, right? Because standard classroom is a hair under 1,000 square feet, DOE standard. But now, you know, at a 6-foot radius around a student, you know, you're talking about a much lower density of students, which I think the teachers will like, but behavior will also have to change, right?
So hopefully then you as designers and planners can be a part of this conversation with our institutions as we kind of move into this phase, this next phase of COVID.
What we have the benefit of in private industry, and in my case, you know, the DOE is one of my clients, a public client, is, you know, we can offer them proactive advice. But the DOE, of course, has to work with, you know, they're part of government, which moves at a slower pace. But I just want them to know that, you know, we're here to help them. I mean, for example, our mechanical, one of my favorite mechanical engineers, Scott Inosuka, you know, came up with his own recommendations because, you know, he designs air conditioning systems, plumbing, and he came up with a two-page best practices for what, you know, he recommends. Like, for example, upgrade air filters, you know, in the in air conditioning units to change them out right away. And also, you know, do things like for plumbing fixtures, you know, install touchless fixtures, right, where you won't have to, you know, your hands on things for germ transmission.
As we stop and think and reflect about this strange time that we're in, whether it's short-term or the long-term, we have to think about resiliency.
Yes, and our critical facilities, such as hospitals, you know, police stations, and fire stations, are really, you know, they set the standard because they just have to be planned and designed to the highest standard. But, you know, this public health issue, right, this virus has become a critical issue. Like, for example, like people don't worry about a hurricane until it hits, right, which is kind of unfortunate. But I also have to say that, you know, we're about to move into a new hurricane season, right? And it's time to get prepared. But now with this pandemic, our standards now and our best practices, our rules, even for the design of critical facilities, now we'll have to be conscious of germ transmission.
That was Honolulu architect Dean Sakamoto talking about how to build better post-pandemic. Sakamoto founded SHADE, a public design institute looking to solve design problems in Hawaii'i.